Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Post-pandemic, many people who were changing their jobs or starting off in the world of work had the ability to work from home at the very top of their list of demands. But now employers are bringing people back to the office. So is the workplace changing to reflect the needs of this new workforce, some of whom would rather be working from home at least part of the time? Patricia Murray is workplace psychologist, previously with the Health and Safety Authority, and she joins me now to talk through some of these changes. So Patricia, really we want to reflect on what the workplace is going to look like in the near future. And it's changing, isn't it?
Yeah. What it's going to look like in the near future and far future, we'll touch maybe on both of them. Of course, it's changing partly because, as you just said there, we've been working from home and there's an urge now to get people, more and more, to get people back to work. So that's one of the features. The other is technology, of course. AI, you know, Internet of Things, wearables, that whole area where things can be done by machines that used to be done by people. And the impact of that isn't just there'll be less jobs for those people. It's also, what will the effect be on the other people who are working around that?
Right.
So it's a good few things.
Let's talk then about the work from home phenomenon and what employers are saying to you about it, and in particular about younger workers. What do people want?
Okay, so I'm really reflecting on my last year then, mainly because that was the year that we're talking to here. It's too early in the new year yet. Although I've got a few queries from HR people too about the same topic. Employers generally want people back in more than they're back in. So they wanted people back in 3 to 4 days, and people want to be back in really two, and maybe they'll do the third. So the negotiation is around that third, fourth day. And, you know, there are both sides to this. I've listened to the HR side and the employee side, and I've had employees saying, how am I supposed to get my kids to school or collect or do things? And I've had to, at the time, I was obviously in an health and safety role, but still I was saying that's not really pertinent to either health and safety or indeed necessarily to the employer's duty. You have to do some adapting. But there might be people who got used to that and then find it difficult to change, which most of us do. Employers, again, sometimes reasonably, sometimes not felt, I want to be able to see them because we don't have good governance systems. And again, that's a very important thing. If you don't have a good relationship with your employees, you don't have good managers or good systems for governance, the best way to see, you'd think, is if they're in. If they're at the computer.
So then from an employer's point of view, are they saying to you that working from home isn't working for them?
I think the employers, and again, it's not a complete model because it's not a random controlled trial. But the general tendency is it's working to an extent, but I want them here more. Mm-hmm. And I want them here more for very valid reasons of training, learning, new people coming in. It's not good coming in. There's nobody else in the office. You learn by watching, by listening, by talking. So very valid reasons employers are saying I want them in more. A certain validity to employees saying, I don't need to be in for the work I do. If I do portfolio work, for instance, I'm designing something, I need to be in one day a week. I work on my own all the rest of the time. You need to look at it piece by piece. So
yeah.
Successfully, you look at it piece by piece.
Well, as we were saying before the break, like, we are living through a time of very high employment, and you would imagine that the market is there for the employees to go out and find what they want. You know, I'm not getting it from this company, so I'll just go to
you
the
know,
next one.
Claire, preparing for the show here, I was looking up some research, and you know, Charles Handy, an Irishman who unfortunately died in December and wrote a lot of work on this whole area of portfolio work, wrote so many books. In fact, wrote a book, The Future of Work, back in 1984, and a lot of what he predicted came true, working from anywhere, doing portfolio work, and people having two jobs or three jobs, you know. So I see that in I saw it certainly last year, late last year, people recruiting young people saying we can't retain them, we're paying what the industry standard is, we get them for 2 years and then they're going. And why are they going? Talking to the people themselves, I don't want to work 40 hours a week for 40 years like my parents. I don't like this idea of having only, 20 days holidays? How am I going to go away with X and Y? So, you know, there's a good bit of, I think there's a lot of scope here for people doing 3 day weeks. And the big growth area in the UK in employment is part-time work and self-employment. So why not, colleges and schools not encourage young people to look at self-employment, look at entrepreneurship, look at it as a part-time thing.
Taking on projects and then going and doing your travel in your 3 months off.
Exactly, you know, and if you have a 3 day week in a company, again, I advised the company then back in November, why don't you, if you're fearful of losing, you know, Saoirse and Ciara and Bill, why don't you offer them a 3 day week? And they all maybe are interested in like starting an app or starting a cafe or doing something. They could do that in their 2 days. And, you know, the tax and the revenue could all be quite beneficial to them.
It sounds like an expensive model for the employer.
Well, you know, if you're getting really good people for 3 days, they will work hard for the 3 days. If you're going to help and encourage them and allow them to do the 2 days elsewhere. And obviously, as a psychologist, I'm not talking just about the economics of things. I'm talking about the well-being of the individual. But also, there's a huge amount where psychology brings benefits to the employers in terms of organisational design. You know,
listen, because we had the tech bros at the inauguration, there's a lot of focus on what they're doing.
We had
the Facebook pushback on diversity policy in the workplace. And everybody was talking about this last week. What are you hearing about that? Is it on the agenda for employers?
I mean, on the agenda, we look at climate change, technology and environment, health, safety, diversity. Absolutely. But it seems to be to an extent of tick boxing. Everybody has to do it, so we have to have it. We don't know how to do it. Do you have a policy or can you give us a number for somebody who knows about it? Because we want to have it covered. And I understand that because legal, you know, situations being what they are, people don't want to be, you know, called to order for some missing protocol or other. Now, do I think that in the future it's going to become a little bit lighter? I do. Is the answer. But we have to be always mindful of the law, the protocols. And as we talked about earlier too, probation, you know, time is now 6 months. You have to be very careful during probation that you show all the proper protocols towards equality, diversity, meeting all the legal requirements for the people before, if you're going to give warnings or if you're going to, you know, remove the people from the employment. So bit of both sides there is the answer, Claire.
Right. OK, so training and development then and how that's going to look into the future. There has been a move to put these courses online and people can sit there and they can go through them in their own time. Does that work?
Yeah, it only works partly. It really is a good idea to have a part online course. For instance, if you're doing a course in something related to, say, I don't know, we'll take fund management if it's that kind of area, or, you know, accounting, or you can do some of the work that people have to do on their own. We've got a module online. It's going to be every Friday, 10 to 11. On Monday, we're going to have an in-person meeting to discuss how we got on for it. So we're all, I mean, all the research into training and development says you do need time on your own to learn. You do need a good expert to teach you how to do it and to impart the knowledge. Now, somebody very good can do that online, but they don't do it the same as they would in classroom. But finally, and really crucially, for the learning to embed and for it to become part of your head, you need to discuss it and relax about it and chat about it and even joke about it and mock it if you need to. But that way it'll be embedded and you need that bit too.
And that's becoming accepted now, is it, across the workplace?
I'm doing my best. But that's the idea,
yeah. Because it is cheaper and easier, I'm sure, for the employers as well.
Yeah.
And more convenient probably for the employees to do these things online. But you're saying, if it's not going in, what's the
point? First of all, it can be gamed. People can sit there and turn the computer on and they're not there at all. And so they did the course because it looks like they were online. So that's always part of everything. It's way better. Any employer listening, you don't save money by putting it all online. You have some online for sure, and then you have checks and balances around that, and you have governance. Did they do it because they ticked the box, or did they do it because you had a meeting, you know, once a month where you all discuss what was good and what was not, and make them want to have done it so that when they see that other people did it, well, it was interesting, they liked it, I might go back and do it. So you need to have both. You need to have the people, all the future of work technology. You need people there to look after it, to support people and to have a governance over it.
Now, what about the term mental health challenges when it comes to the workplace? Like, there are people, of course, who will have real challenges and real difficulties. But is that a difficult area for human resources?
It is. And obviously, it's an area I'm big time in, as having studied psychology and I studied mental health as well and psychoanalysis. So I came from that background. And obviously, we all have mental health issues now and then. I have, you have, who doesn't? It would be silly to say I never have a challenge. But there's a completely different approach to mental health challenges that are part of everyone's life all the time, whether you're in first year or third year or transition year or college or leaving college or retiring or whatever. But they shouldn't be pathologized. And I know Tony Blair was talking about that recently and got a lot of traction. But I have to say a lot of what he said was truthful. And it's not to make anyone feel bad about themselves. The opposite is to say we need to accept ourselves and identify as people who all have a mental terrain with which we have to work all the time. A mental disorder is a completely different thing, and that you get a psychiatric analysis of yourself and you get a diagnosis and you get medication or talk therapy, and you absolutely also can be in the workplace and be a very productive part of the workforce. And there might be adaptations, and legally here in Ireland we do have to make adaptations for those things, any disability. But otherwise it's not helpful to always say about everything that's a challenge or that I don't feel like, or it's stressful, that means I can't do it. It means it's a pressure.
Yeah, when we talk about this a lot in our parenting items as well, about building resilience, does that feed into this as
totally
well?
Totally does indeed, and I'm speaking soon on resilience. Resilience is really about having had the experience of having had to overcome something. So if you've never had to overcome something, and when I, way, way back in the past, was dealing with parents, I'd say, you know, now and then it's good for your child to just not, to have to do something they don't want to do, even if you don't really want it done, because then they have to just go outside their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And they have to be told sometimes no, which is very, very important, so that they have to build a resilience to, what do I do when I don't get what I want? Do I tantrum, or do I, okay then, maybe I can have it next week, or something else? So resilience in the workplace is, I'm used to dealing with these challenges. I can deal with it by being nice to people, by being, you know, maybe a little bit more discursive, by going to HR if I need to, by maybe doing a little bit more work around it, doing my research, putting a proposal, loads of ways.
Always good to talk to you, Patricia. Interesting times ahead for the workplace. That's Patricia Murray, who is a workplace psychologist. Thank you, Patricia.